welcome to yet another episode of the Swiss Ballers Pod. I'm Fabo, and as usual, I'm joined by two absolute ballers. One of them is my friend Arman back home in Zurich. Difficult week for you, mate. How's life? You picked up an injury, I hear?
Oh no, just a knock. But I think I'll be all right for the weekend. The injury is more in the heart, to be honest.
Yeah, it's been a tough week for Arsenal fans. I'm sure we'll cover it in over the next hour or so. The second baller joining us today is Dwayne, sat very close to me in West London. How are you, brother? Have you recovered from last night's six-a-side madness?
Oh, yeah, you know, emotionally not recovered because you want to win, but physically, yeah.
Okay. Great. I'm good. I was just happy to be back on the pitch, but I needed like a training session, and the opposition we played, they were intense and they were up for it and they were physical, and my knee isn't quite ready for that sort of vibe yet. So there's that.
You get in there though.
I'm getting there slowly, slowly. Still very rusty. Some of the passes I played were shocking. But we'll get there, step by step. We'll do the opening questions because we all love them so much. Arman, who's going to win the Champions League this year?
Madrid, I think.
Again, as they always do.
Probably.
Okay, and Dwayne, a tricky one for you. How, out of all the eight games that we just saw in the quarterfinals over the last week or so, which individual performance stood out to you the most?
Rudiger's man marking on Haaland.
Yeah, he completely took him out of the game, didn't he? In the second leg, that is. I mean, he did it on both legs, but I assume you mean yesterday evening, second leg.
Yeah. I would have said Rafinha, but then they got knocked out. So I wanted to go with a winner. And I think Rudiger is one of the team. He's in one of the teams that won, and he was outstanding.
Yeah, I probably agree with that. And he capped it off by scoring the winning pen. So good night for him overall. Let's dive right into the Champions League quarters, because there were 32 goals scored in this year's Champions League quarterfinals. That's the most goals ever scored at this stage of the competition. I think everyone's kind of felt that this was prime Champions League football. The away goal rules being scrapped really helped. And yeah, it was just a thoroughly enjoyable watch, I thought, over the whole week of the games, and we're going to focus on the return legs I should say today in the pod, and we'll probably start with Dortmund versus Atletico Madrid. Dortmund, who are in the top four in Europe but failed to do so in their own domestic league, what's that a result of, Arman? What do you put that down to? Why are they so much better in Europe as opposed to their own league?
I think probably maybe the romantic in me talking, but I think the stadium helps them a lot. Don't think you want to go to Dortmund in a return leg. I don't think that's nice. So I think the fans push them really hard. And, you know, sometimes Champions League can be an out of the domestic leagues, and Dortmund, obviously well reported last year that they had probably the biggest heartbreak ever in their history. So maybe the Champions League, Wednesday night, Tuesday night, it's just a different vibe, and it's just different, and it can help sometimes when you don't quite edit. And that probably the easiest run in to get there. Like, not taking anything away from them, but Eindhoven and Atletico, it's tough for sure, but like, there can be more difficult paths.
Yeah, it could have been Real Madrid in the quarters, or Bayern for that matter. I want to quickly give a shout out to Ian Maatsen, the fullback who scored the goal. But Sabitzer stole the show on the night. 100% of his dribblings completed. Four shots, two assists, one goal. He was on fire in that second leg against Atletico, which for a moment looked like they'd lost it, and then he kind of clawed it back for them, scoring a weak-footed finish brilliantly late on. He's ex-United, Dwayne, and as so many others, he's gone on to do better things than when he was at Man United. Why is that?
I don't know if it's something to do with the roles, because he seems like he's got so much of a freer role in Dortmund, where he can get forward when he wants to, he can link when he wants to. But I don't know, in United it felt like we had him in a box and we told him to play in that box and don't worry out of it. But he seems so much more freer in Dortmund. It's the same with Sancho, like you can see so much more confidence in his game as well. I don't know what it is at United. I don't know whether we take the abilities out of players for some reason, which it seems like we're doing. But I feel like some part of it's got to go down to the way they're utilized as well.
Yeah, definitely. They deploy Sabitzer in this forward-facing role as like almost a second striker behind Füllkrug, and he gets that license to roam in behind Brandt, and then kind of also overtake Brandt and make those deep runs. I mean, you saw it when what was it, the third goal where Füllkrug scored that run, and then the cross with his weak foot from the byline. I mean, it's peak Xabi, so that's what he's good at, basically, those runs in behind the defense, kind of ghosting in late, and then he's got the quality to back it up as well at the moment, and he's playing with confidence, at least in Europe he is. So obviously came off scoring on the weekend as well in a very important game for Dortmund, so good to see him doing well. I wish he'd done that for United more often, but let's not make it about United because it will just depress both Dwayne and me. And we've got enough depressed people on this pod already today. So, I do want to give a quick shout out to Atletico, though. They were uncharacteristically poor in defense, Armin. I mean, the four goals conceded, that's rare for Atletico. What went wrong for them?
Yeah, it's a bit untypical for them. I think they came a bit away from their stereotypical, like, deep block. I think they're a much more open side now, with quality as well. So one thing I cannot like pinpoint a reason why that was, but yeah, some of them were like 1v1s, Sabitzer's goal, Füllkrug goal, like. It's the duel that they lo lose in the end. Like, I never. The goal is not. How do you say? Like, they stand completely open. It's more like the one Madsen as well, you know? One step closer, you know, that. And you're there and you block the shot. Füllkrug's goal, he gets in front of him, you know? So, yeah, maybe just lack of concentration. And Dortmund was sharp from first minute to the last. Like, they had the period where Atletico scored, but they found themselves again and they were just sharp on the day.
Yeah, it's a bit of a nothing season for Atleti, and Dortmund have a huge chance, but do you give them much of a chance against PSG? They obviously already played each other in the group stages, and Dortmund failed to win either one of those games, losing the opener 2-1, 2-0 to PSG, and everyone thought they were done and dusted in the Champions League after two games and 1 point. Do you give them perhaps more of a chance now, or you think PSG is the limit for them?
Probably it is just because I think the front three of PSG is just with Barcola as well. Like this is proper offense now, and they're gonna have to. Is the return like at the Borussia Park? At
No,
Borussia Park. Oh my
the
God,
return
Signal
leg
Iduna
is
Park.
in the return leg is in Paris.
Okay, yeah, that's probably a bit of a disadvantage, but. Yeah, let's see. I'll go for PSG probably, just on experience and the quality. But yeah, I would like to see Dortmund go through there.
Okay, Dwayne, what are your thoughts on this matchup? Just quickly, based on what you saw from PSG so far, do you think they'll cruise past Dortmund again?
I think Cruz definitely. I don't think they'll Cruz pass because they struggled against Barca. Like, I think up until the red card, it looked like Barca would just breeze past them, and then they struggled. So, PSG is an interesting one. I think it's going to be a really close affair. I can actually see Dortmund winning because momentum plays a huge part, and I feel like they're going to carry a lot of momentum from scoring 4 goals against one of the meanest defenses in Europe. But I'm going to edge it slightly to PSG because of names on the sheet and Bakola and Mbappe. I think they're the team to beat, really. But I think it'll be much closer than people think, that's for sure.
Okay, I mean PSG as ever, or as usual, I should say, not ever, of course, but as usual, not really being pushed too hard in the league, domestically speaking. So the Champions League is pretty much the only thing they have. So they'll probably be up for it as well. And I'm with both of you on this as well. I think PSG will go through and have a great chance in that one-off game in the final to finally win it, actually. I think Mbappe would love to leave with a Champions League trophy, even more so if it's from against Real Madrid. That would be an interesting subplot. I'm sure the media would agree with that and make a huge story out of it. Let's leave Dortmund behind and turn our attention to the two English teams. Let's talk about Manchester City versus Real Madrid. The game ended 1-1 after extra time, and in penalties, it turned out that City aren't as calm and collected, and Real Madrid still have that X factor, which has carried them to so many Champions League titles in the past. The Croatians missed from the spot, Modric and Kovacic, but it was eventually that weird situation around Bernardo Silva's penalty that stole the headlines, where the ball went missing for about 40 seconds or so before he literally just chipped it into Lunin's hands at the end, which was sort of the end of a frantic 120 minutes of football. Didn't quite live up to the hype and the insanity of that first leg, but it was still a great game. Armin, of course, you were watching the Arsenal game, but like I do want to talk about this. I know you saw the highlights as well, and Dwayne, you
I
too.
watched it. I watched it back, actually.
Okay, so talk to me about this City dominance, which they're now very used to, playing against teams with a low block and breaking them down. But they're not breaking them down as efficiently and as successfully as last season. So what changed for them? What's the difference between C City perhaps this season to seasons before? They just, I mean, Real Madrid sat deep and parked the bus and just refused to concede. And I want to know why that is. Why are City not breaking through?
I think there's a couple of reasons, in my opinion. And I think when you miss players like Gundogan and Mahrez, I think people underestimate how good they were. Like, especially Gundogan, in those type of games, he always turns up, and his arrival in the box and his, I don't know, he has the smell, where the ball is gonna end, how many ricochet goals he scored, it's not lucky. It's, this guy, he knows where the ball is. I think they missed him for the whole of the season, to be fair. And Real Madrid just were very organized, and Rodri said after the game, yeah, only one team wanted to play football. And I just thought the, football is also played without the ball. It's not only with the ball. And the way they were in their shape, especially in the second half, where City really, really pushed on. But it was like always the same pattern. The ball comes to Grealish, to Bernardo Silva, they pass it back. And you could see like Haaland making runs, and I could see De Bruyne making runs, but they never made that pass, that maybe the trickier pass or the brave pass. They always played safe. They played a bit too safe for me, City, in that final third, and they were a bit too cautious. Oh no, no counterattack, and then Vinny's gonna break us. I really could feel that. Honestly, I'm 100% believer if they played against, I don't know, Brentford or something like that, they would play a lot more direct passes and a lot more fluid. But I think they were really scared of Vinicius and Rodrigo hitting them on the break and Bellingham. So that's why probably they couldn't, or Guardiola said to them, just save, save, save until we find an opening. But they didn't really had any opening. Rüdiger made that mistake, yeah. And then it was 1-1, but Real was fantastic. And Carvajal as well. I mean, if I had to pick out the performance of the quarterfinals, it would be him. He was on a yellow pretty early. And then how he defended against Grealish and Doku, that was proper defending, proper experience.
Yeah, Dwayne, is this perhaps one of the things that flies under the radar a bit? I mean, Real Madrid have only conceded 20 goals so far in the league. Is the defensive part of it perhaps something that people underestimate because we obviously focus on Bellingham and Vinny and Rodrigo?
Well, there is that common saying, isn't it, that offense wins games and defense wins championships. And I think Real Madrid's got one of the most organized teams, and I feel like that's a lot to do with Ancelotti as well, because Bellingham's post-game interview where he was saying that he allows them to play with offensive freedom, but I feel like it's a complete 180 on the defensive end where defensively, I think he's more rigid and focused on that area of the game. And then offensively, he trusts his players. And the personnel-wise, I think when you've got Rüdiger, who's incredibly aggressive, when you've got Carvajal, who's so smart, I think they've got the right mesh of players and experience. They're doing it like they've got their young players mesh with experience and their older players, and it just feels like a really cohesive team. And it's difficult to break them down when they're all on the same page, even regardless of their injuries, too.
Yeah, I want to hear your opinion on that Bellingham interview because I'm sure you saw the whole 5 minutes of it. What were your thoughts?
He's so incredibly mature for his age. You know when Rio Ferdinand at the end asks him the age and he says he's 20? It blows my mind the way that he answers the questions so smart and like. I think the thing that stuck in my head was when Rio asked him about whether there was pressure playing for Real Madrid, and then he said it's more about the responsibility. He's like, I think Rio said, does the badge feel heavy? And then Bellingham said something like, it's like the responsibility, and if you play here, you need to be responsible for the fans, he just seems like so calm, like he'll be one of the top players for like the next 10, 15 years because he's way more mature than his age shows.
Yeah, I was. Did you see this, Armand, this interview?
Yeah, I saw the interview today and yeah, he's just a class act. Really, really cool guy.
Yeah,
And
I was. I
the
thought this
penalty
as
as
well.
well. I mean,
Oh,
this guy
so
is
calm.
20, and but probably everyone on the TV, me and itself, I was like going through the takers and yeah, Bellingham will score. And I thought Modric will score, to be honest. But then I thought to myself, wait, this guy's 20 and I'm thinking he's gonna score. Like, it's not normal, you know. It's really, and the way he hypes up the fans in the shootout as well, you know, this takes a lot of guts. And yeah, he's just a class act. But I think everybody knows that. It's crazy,
And the
this guy.
absolute shift he puts in for
The
120 minutes,
shift he put in,
absolutely
wow.
running.
What a shit. What a character as well.
Yeah, I mean that there's to me there's two parts of this. One is his eloquence and how he conducts himself in that interview, you know, how the words he uses, he doesn't so many times in these interviews you just hear the same shit all over again and it's media trained almost animalistic, like almost just kind of doing the same routine as if you're like an animal in the zoo just walking the same path that you've trodden and say the same things over and over again. But he manages to not only be eloquent, but also give content to what he says. And as you said, Dwayne, it's such a differentiated breakdown of of the game he just played after 120 minutes plus, you know, the excitement and the emotions of a penalty shootout. And he just stands there and analyzes it so calm and composedly, like really, really impressive from on that side. And yeah, I think this is perhaps something we've forgot to honor enough over the past, I don't know, 6, 7 months is the fact that he's actually a central midfielder. He just has had this mad scoring and assisting run, where everyone's been hyping his contribution, but also he's in there to tackle and put a shift in and be a central midfielder as such. And he was brilliant last night in that regard and really put in the shift, and his involvement in the goal as well shouldn't go unnoticed. That touch was beautiful.
He just
So
seems like he's got like all his senses dialed up to 100, where he just knows
yeah.
exactly where to be. His
Yeah, if
all
this guy
round game is
stays fit,
amazing.
completely agree. If this guy stays fit throughout his career, then he'll be around and at the top for 15, 20 years. Maybe not 20, but 15 for sure. At the very top. Super impressive. The other side of that is Erling Haaland, who a lot of people also put into that best player at the moment discussion, and he's never been one to have a huge impact on the game other than goals. But in 180 minutes against Real Madrid, he completed 11 passes, had four shots off target, one shot on target, and missed one big chance, zero assists, zero goals out of the four scored. Is it starting to become the case that the goals aren't enough, Arman? He's only, and I'm putting this in massive quotation marks, on 20 goals for the season in the Prem. Are we reaching the point now where we want more from him?
Yeah, but he was injured a lot, so I think that 20 goal tally is probably still pretty ridiculous. I don't really get the criticism he gets. I don't really, I mean, sure, yeah, his hold up play is not perfect, but I mean, he will improve on that 100, I'm 100% sure. And in the meantime, if I don't want him to do the hold up play too much. I don't want him to drop deep. I drop too much. Just stay on the line. Just make those runs from the left, and be in the box and be in the right moments. And the goals are gonna come again. I'm so 100% sure he's an elite finisher, elite striker. He has everything he needs. Yeah, he needs to work some little bits and bobs. But I mean, he's so young. There is gonna come a time where it stagnates a little bit. But I don't really get it. I mean, yeah, you and he probably for sure would have loved to score in those games, but I think he's still unbelievable, this guy. And he's not having the best of times, but there's always gonna be a time where he's not gonna be firing.
Dwayne, he got substituted off after 90 minutes yesterday. Is this a decision you understand, a justifiable decision, or are you like you got to keep him on even if he doesn't get touches on the ball and contribute to build-up play because he's got that knack for a goal at the end? Where do you come in?
Didn't Pep say something like he wanted to come off or something like that in his interview? Like the reasons for his substitution was that he heard that his players wanted to come off. So I don't know whether that's true, because if that is true, it seems a bit disappointing. But if that is not true, then you're probably going to be pissed off if you're someone like Haaland hearing that. But yeah, I thought the reason he came off is because he asked to come off. But you always want to play like that on the end of the field, because his natural instincts in front of a goal could just generate a goal out of nothing. And I think that was a really good moment where, credit to Lunin, because he read it perfectly, where De Bruyne tried to find him at the back post. And but yeah, Haaland's struggling, but like Armin said, he's such a good player that he doesn't really need to. His skill set is so focused in the box that he doesn't really need to drop deep. And I couldn't help but think yesterday that if Gundogan was there, it would have worked perfectly, because Rudiger was so high on Haaland, like way outside the box, that Gundogan's timing of the running behind would have been perfect. I feel like there's a bit of a personnel problem, because they were missing Stones yesterday for sure, because Akanji kept finding himself in such great positions, but he's not the John Stones of last season, the centre back who can drive forward. So I feel like there was a bit of personnel that was missing there.
What I would say though is, like, what I thought to myself yesterday is, like, imagine Haaland being in the Real Madrid team and defending deep and going on the counterattack. Like, this is the Haaland you want to see if you're like a Haaland, I don't know, fan. Like, this is what he is, like the counter attacks, the speed, the physical of bullying defenders. And with this always playing against this low block, you're not really. I remember when Jamie Carragher said that he may have actually picked the wrong club, not for the trophies, but for his own development, you know. And he's definitely more of a counter attack player right now, but he for sure can develop it. What do you guys think of that?
Yeah, I'm always on the fence with this. I remember that moment as well when Jamie Carragher was like, I'm not sure he picked the right club, and everyone was like, he won the treble, he like scored 50 goals. I get what he means, because as you just perfectly said, Arman, he's a counter-attacking, he's best when he's got his face to goal, when he's running at goal. He's not, I don't want to see him laying passes off and you know, playing those simple headers down into the paths of central midfielders. But ultimately, what is it you want? You know, do you want to focus on yourself and kind of just be the guy who scores 1,000 career goals, or do you want to be the guy who wins all the trophies? And I'm on the fence. I can't say, but I get where Jamie Carragher comes from there, Dwayne.
I feel like he's used to doing both in a way, because in Dortmund you would see him play that counter-attacking style where he's running through balls and stuff. But at City, because you've got such good facilitators, he doesn't really need to do that as much, and they dominate the ball way too more. So I feel like he's actually improved his game in the areas of penalty box scoring, where his movement in the penalty box is elite. I think it's second to nobody in the world probably. But
Yeah.
there's always the question of, like, when one thing doesn't go well for you, people will start questioning what you're not doing. And I feel like that's happening right now for Haaland, because he's not scoring the goals as much. People are starting to question his actual game. But when they come, and when his purple patch comes, it's going to be such a big purple patch that people will stop questioning him again, is what I feel.
Yeah, he'll always have those scoring runs. There's no denying. It's a weird thing, because there's no denying the fact that he's probably the best finisher in the world. So, yeah, we're discussing this on a very high level. It's complaining on a very high level.
Yeah,
Just
but that
before
for
we,
sure,
yeah,
he will not be happy at the moment as well. So,
no, I'm sure also Pep knows that this is something they need to work on, as the
yeah.
substitution for me showed last night. You know, the game perhaps suited Alvarez better than Haaland, and that, yeah, maybe they need
Maybe,
to
yeah.
change a bit of their game plan. I don't know. One more thing I want to talk about is Pep Guardiola's Champions League legacy. He has won it once in 11 seasons with Bayern and Man City. He's only won it once without Lionel Messi. It's a bit of a Bill Belichick and Tom Brady situation, for those of you who know and watch the NFL. Was Guardiola just carried by Messi, or where does it, to me, that feels like he should have more Champions Leagues. I don't know. Dwayne, what are your thoughts?
It wasn't there's like a viral meme of Guardiola Champions League meltdowns, where there are just ties he should win that he just loses. There's no denying he's probably one of, if not the greatest football manager of all time. But it just feels like there are some moments where he could be overthinking, where his team and his philosophy is so good that he doesn't need to make that many changes, but he just puts in one too many and it costs him a match. I agree with you. There should be way more Champions League for all the team success he's had domestically and all the firepower he's had. There should be way more Champions League success. So I do agree with you. There should be at least a couple more, minimum.
Arman, do you go along with that?
Yeah, a bit, but I think sometimes, like, it's also bad luck as well. I mean, yeah, you're maybe gonna say, yeah, but you, when you, I don't know when Llorente scored this goal with his hip, but I think Man City hit the bar 3 times that game. Like, yeah, you can say that's the mentality of it, but I think in some games they just had bad luck, to be honest.
That
Yeah.
was 2019, I think, was his Tottenham, wasn't it?
Tottenham, yeah. And then when they go out to Lyon, for sure he will be. I remember Raheem Sterling missing the open goal. Like, that's not Guardiola's fault, you know. I don't know if there is a pattern there. But yeah, to be honest, in the Champions League final against Chelsea, maybe he overcoached it a little bit. But other than that, I don't, and even at Bayern, like, I think he just had a lot of bad luck as well.
But then wouldn't you agree that the three teams that they lost to that you just mentioned, Tottenham, Lyon and Chelsea, were all considerably weaker than City? And those were all much more favorable ties for City.
I'm gonna
Yeah,
throw in AS
definitely.
Monaco as well in this.
Yeah.
Monaco, true. Yeah, maybe there is something there. He's probably more suited to league competitions. I don't know, but to be fair, I think there's been a lot of bad luck for him as well.
There's definitely that as well. Yes. We will take a break, and when we come back, we will offer some free therapy for. And we're back to a very subdued episode today, with Armand feeling the disappointments of the last three Arsenal games. So I'm going to start with you, Dwayne. Arsenal versus Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich winning that second leg at home. Are Arsenal in their bottle era, or what's going on?
I don't think they actually played that badly. I just think Bayern sealed off the game. Like, they just sealed off the tie really well. I don't know. It's difficult to call them bottle era for Champions League, but for the Premier League game against Villa, definitely. But Champions League, I don't think they were expected to win it. So I'll be a little bit lenient and say they aren't in their bottle era just yet.
What led to the downfall of Arsenal then in that situation? Was it just Bayern being stronger, or did you feel like Arsenal could have done better?
Probably in the first leg, they should have done much better. Very end-to-end affair. Didn't really seem like Arsenal, because Arsenal games this season have been exemplified by control and more stability, whereas against Bayern, they just seemed a little bit more open, a little bit more prone to the counter-attack, and I think that was their downfall, really. But a second leg was just a very straightforward Bayern tie, I think. I think they just did what they had to do. And Arsenal probably not really into the position yet where they can get into like the last four of the Champions League. They're still a young team, I think. People have to keep that in mind too.
Armand, you want to speak?
On what? I could speak a thousand things.
Okay, let me set you up. Why did Arsenal fall short against a Bayern team who domestically are struggling so much?
I don't know. I really don't. I mean, you could see it in the Porto game that Champions League is still different than Premier League. And to a certain degree, I believe that. But at the end of the day, I thought, okay, come on. I mean, it's 11 against 11. It's two goals and it's just football. Like, let's just play like we play in the Premier League. Surely that's maybe a factor, but let's just kick on. But it does seem like that our young guys don't really are used to that rhythm yet, that Champions League, Premier League rhythm. I think Thierry Henry said we couldn't at the moment. We're not really good when we have to play all three days. Like, maybe there's an element of that as well, but
Is that because of lack of squad depth, or why?
yeah, I think lack of squad depth, because I Kivior and Nelson and Smith Rowe and Nketiah. That is not. You cannot compare it with, I don't know, Alvarez, Doku, Kovacic. These are different players, established players. So after that 11, I miss. I mean, Nketiah, the amount of times he's subbed on in a game and does absolutely nothing. I mean, it's so. How's this guy still gets the opportunities? Give someone from the academy a go. I mean, this is fucking ridiculous. And as well, Sinchenko at the weekend again. It's just so sloppy. It's like we still have areas where we need to strengthen in depth because, yeah, bringing on if Saka goes miss if Saka is out, then Reece Nelson is gonna play, and I love this guy, but it's just not good enough if you want to compete like every 3 days on the highest level like City did and Real Madrid too. But yeah, it's really tough going out. It is really tough.
Is this do you think this will have an effect also on the league? Because you the way you're talking to me and the way I sort of felt looking at Arsenal fans on Twitter and everything is that the league is lost already. The Champions League is now definitely lost, but the league is already like it's fucked. And then I looked at the stats and we got to put it in into perspective, man. Arsenal have just come off of 11 game unbeaten run, only drawing to Man City in that time, winning all the other games. And Aston Villa having a fantastic season. I mean, Aston Villa are doing so well. You can lose against Aston Villa, that's fine. Like, there's no shame in that. And of course, yes, City have an equally impressive unbeaten run. They also have and lost to Aston Villa last time. They'd lost a game which was in the December of last year. But Arsenal are still in a good run of form in the league, technically. Like, yes, this L looks a bit ugly on the form table, but otherwise, they're still in with a chance. And I personally don't think this is over the Premier League. And you're like, ah, it's done, it's fucked, whatever. We can't recover. What makes you so sure? Is it the lack of faith in your own team, or just because you think City will run away with it?
It just feels, if you would, I'm sure if you like would measure all the stats and the performance against Villa, first off, it was a game of two halves, basically. I mean, Villa were so good in that second half. Then you would say, yeah, it's nowhere near over, but it's just a feeling I have in a way. And when I look at those players after the game yesterday and at the after game against Villa and their body language, it just feels pretty deja vu at the moment. And it's just, I mean, we talk a lot about the title race, and at the end of the day, the fixtures are a massive contributing factor. And I just think even the Chelsea at home fixture now looks really difficult, the way Chelsea are playing against the big teams. They're probably a bit better as well. So Wolves away Saturday is massive. And I think if they can show that they've learned from last year, that they have gained a bit more resilience and can go there and win. And if they win with a impressive performance, then I'm sure maybe we can go in the other moment, the momentum can shift again. But at the moment, it's just a feeling that I have in me that says it's not gonna be our year. And I don't think it's fair. And I really have to say, I don't think it's fair at all to say like we bottled it again, because we're still new to this. And we'd have to deal with City, probably the best team of the era. And if you would look at the teams, just neutral, we are not the best team in the league, and we're not the best team in Europe. So what Arteta is getting out of this group, I think, is really impressive. And I think he's getting so much stick at the moment, which I think is not really deserved. We just have to grow and go again every year, go again, improve, go again, improve. And hopefully one day I can be happy at the end of a season. But yeah, it was a bit of a long one, but I'll stop
No,
now.
I mean, it's good. It's get it off your chest. Dwayne, offer us an outsider's perspective on this. We heard many reasons there: lack of squad depth, lack of experience, perhaps a lack of or lack of realistic expectations. Who do you make responsible for this week of horror for Arsenal with the two Bayern games and the Aston Villa defeat in between?
I think it's a little bit on everybody because, as a when you're playing football, you can't always expect everything to go right for you. And for the last 3 months, it's been such an amazing spell for Arsenal that you knew it would hit reality soon, and it did against Bayern the first leg. And then you thought, okay, now they need the response. Now is the thing that's like you really find out if you're a good team in the way you respond to a hard loss. And against Aston Villa, they started off the game brilliantly. Like, they were really good at the beginning, and then it slowed down. And then you got the sense that Villa would go away with it, which they did. And then two losses on the trot, you're like, okay, it's fine. It's the second one on the bounce. Let's have a really good performance in Bayern. And again, it wasn't a typical Arsenal performance. So,
Do you put that down to Mikel
yes.
Arteta setting the team up differently, or what changed?
It's a tough one because I just think that they're approaching a tougher part of the season, and one area that Pep Guardiola as a manager doesn't really get a lot of credit for is the way he rotates his squad, and that the fact that everybody in his squad is so fit and we're approaching like the tail end of the season. Maybe it's a lack of squad depth, but I feel like a lot of managers have to learn that trade as well, and I don't think Arteta has really learned it because you can see Saka is just hobbling around the pitch sometimes, like he's played so many minutes this season. I still don't feel like, apart from Ødegaard, Arsenal don't really have that one player who you can like, 100% he's delivering in the big game. Like when nothing is going right, he's the one that's going to step up. Like they seem like they're such a team-oriented like 11, which is great for them. But in some situations, you need that one leader that's going to step up and take the reins and go ahead. And
Yeah, I agree 100%.
the last week would have been perfect on the back of two losses that you need one guy to rally everyone and just put an end to it. But it just seems like inexperience is getting to them. That being said, the Premier League is not over because the one thing that Arsenal and Liverpool have going for them is that City's got to go to Spurs, and they've never won at Spurs in the Premier League. So that's the small shimmer of light for both of them.
Yeah, I mean, I still don't think that the title is won at all for City. I think I don't see City as strong as they were last season. I'm also not sure they'll reach the FA Cup final so comfortably as people think they will.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you.
And I agree 100% on the Odegaard part as well. He is probably the only player in the team who can, in the offensive side of it, who can say I performed well in the last three games, you know. It's just the team is very, yeah, we're team oriented, but in a way we heavily re rely on him. And if he doesn't create, nothing gets created. And I think the left side with Rice, Trossard or Rice Martinelli, yeah, Rice is amazing winning the duels and box to box, but you know that bit of a playmaking. Yeah, he hasn't got that yet,
A bit of
and I think
Granit
more.
Xhaka.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, Xhaka was amazing at that. At the li really providing Martinelli. You know, Xhaka when he got the ball, he just played it down the channel or played it in the spot between the center back and the fullback. And he never even thought about it. You know, he just received the ball, played, received the ball, played to Zinchenko, received the ball, played to Odegaard, received the ball. It was so fluid. And Rice, he's like, okay, I look up. Now what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna switch the ball to the other side. No, just play to Martinelli in the feet, and then he can go in a 1v1 against and it's Kimmich or against, I don't know, it's at the weekend. But I think if Martinelli would play with Odegaard, we would see a different Martinelli. So, yeah, it's just offensively, we haven't been good enough at all in the last three games.
I also
I
still think
really
there's an.
question.
Sorry, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Sorry, I really questioned the team. One aspect of team selection that I questioned was Zinchenko against Villa, because the entire Premier League, Villa has always been playing this really fast winger, as in Leon Bailey, Moussa Dembélé. Sometimes Watkins goes out to the left or the right, and I was thinking that Zinchenko probably wasn't the most suited for a game like that because it was quite evident from the start that Villa were going to sit back and hit on the counter. And up until then, Kivior had been playing so good, and Tomiyasu had returned from injury. So I feel like there's a hint of squad selection dilemma,
Yeah.
but yeah, I feel like that could have been improved as well there, slightly.
I think Sinchenko is just on a bad run of form. But I think the way he creates the overload in the middle gives us, I always think when Sinchenko plays and he plays well, we're such more fluid team, and we can dominate and almost choke teams so much better. I remember a lot of games in the Emirates, where we just choked teams, and I think Sinchenko is perfect at that. When he and then on the count on the flip side, we were very good in the run where we had since January at intercepting those counterattacks with just the three. When White tucks in, when you have Gabriel, Saliba and White, we could always stop those counterattacks very well. But yeah, of course, when Sinchenko is a 1v1, he's exposed. That's for sure. And we just don't have a really natural replacement. I never was convinced of Kivior, and then Tomiyasu is good defender, but it's just not enough. I'm not saying these are bad players, but if you want to win at the big stages, these big trophies, the quality is just missing a bit, yeah, Timber's been injured, unfortunately, but everybody has injuries. So yeah, that's my take on that.
It's a funny old game, isn't it, football? We've been singing their praises all for the past 2 months, and then 1 week hits and everything is suddenly questioned and put into question, and it
Well,
wasn't
I
as
said
great as
that
we
all
thought.
along, to be fair.
You did. You were never as optimistic as I was. I still think you have a good chance of winning it. But now also I do have to mention something I've said before, is the lack of someone who can score you 20 goals in a season
Yeah.
is a big problem, which might be the thing that separates the three top sides at the end of the week, at the end of the season, because Liverpool don't have that either at the moment, apart from maybe Salah, who's also not in the best run of form since the AFCON.
Yeah.
But that's a different story.
I think how
Okay.
Havertz will finish the season will determine the transfer market as well, I think. Like how we're gonna
Yeah.
approach this.
Let's just
A lot
quickly
of early
turn.
season bookies saying that you're going in
Yeah.
for Victor Gyökeres.
Gyökeres, yeah, that would be nice.
That would be very nice. Boys, let's just turn our attention to Barcelona versus PSG for a second. I'm going to keep this short because, again, we might have Joan on to talk to him about this from a Barca insider's perspective. Share with me your thoughts, just quickly on this. Armin, were Barca robbed that red card? Should it have been a red card or no?
I don't think it was a red card. I think he just laced the armor on him for a short second. But I don't know, to be honest. I'm really not sure. I would say no from just a natural reaction, but maybe in the law it says something different. I don't know. I'm not sure.
And Dwayne, how good are PSG? Are they good enough to win it finally? Is that project finally going to come to a successful end or nah?
I don't think they can win it. I don't think they will win it, I should say. But are they good enough? Probably. It's just they look really good, but I don't know. I always feel like they do one bad moment, and luck was on their side with Araujo, because up until then they didn't really look like scoring. So I felt like, they were a bit lucky, which every team needs, but I just don't see them beating the right-hand side of the bracket.
No, me too.
Yeah, I go along with that. I just don't. It's a team that just doesn't smell nice. But you can win the Champions League even if you don't have a great team. I mean,
Yeah.
their
No.
path to the final might be, Sociedad, this Barca with a lot of luck and a red card, Dortmund. It's kind of not the
It's
most
an
difficult of
impressive
ways.
run. Yeah.
Yeah, but you got to beat who you can beat, who you've got in front of you, and they're doing that. So. And Mbappe is the Champions League top scorer this season. So they got a few things going for them. And he's got 40 goals as well this season, which
Yeah.
kind of somehow no one is noticing because he's playing in the wrong league.
I would say also Real Madrid for me is the clear winner, but it's just if you have a player like Mbappe in your squad, you just never know. Honestly, I'm such a huge fan of his.
Yeah. There's a couple of general things I want to talk about. One of them is Cole Palmer. He is currently the Premier League's top scorer, equal amount of goals as Erling Haaland.
How many pens do you have that stat?
Seven. This is off the
Okay.
top of my head. I think it's seven. It's six or seven.
Yeah.
Does that take anything away from it?
It takes a little bit away from it, but doesn't. It's still an amazing achievement, absolutely crazy achievement. But I mean, if 13 goals and 7 pens, it doesn't sound as nice as 20 goals, no pens. But you have to score those pens, and I remember some of them were quite in some tricky moments. Man City, Man United, last minute penalty, like these are, and the way he slots them away, top corner, bottom corner, he's a impressive young fella.
To be honest, I couldn't really give less of a shit about penalties or not. At the end of the day, he's still scoring. That's all
Yeah,
that matters.
yeah, bear in mind Haaland is also City's penalty taker, and he's got
Yeah.
five, I think, four or five, something like that. He's also
Okay.
taken a fair few, so it might help polish up the stats. Bear in mind,
Maybe, maybe.
Watkins is on 18 with 0 pence, so maybe we should be talking about that a bit more. But we won't. Dwayne, do you want to have your say on Palmer? Should he be in the England starting 11 maybe after this season?
The only bad thing is going against him is that he's got so many players in that position. Like, ideally, based on form, he should be in the starting 11, but then no England fan or no England manager is ever going to have the balls to drop Foden, Saka, or Bellingham.
Did he
So,
maybe drop
based.
Saka? What do you guys think in the World Cup? Does he maybe drop Saka for Palmer?
I can't see it happening. I just don't see it happening. I think Saka is just really good at what he does, and Palmer's great. Palmer's probably, like you said last party, probably the player of the season. But I don't know. I think you can't really drop Saka because they're two different players as well. And I feel like England's team needs Saka more than it needs Palmer right now.
I completely agree with that. I think the player type Saka is keeps him in the squad over Palmer. The final thing I want to talk about, guys, is Leverkusen's first championship ever in history. They are currently on a 43 game unbeaten run. That's all the games they've played this season. If they don't lose against West Ham tonight, Thursday, they will be on the longest unbeaten run ever in all five top European leagues with 44 games. Currently, that run is held by Juventus in 2011-12, if anyone gave a fuck about this stat. I was looking at stats for this. Like, what stat impresses me the most about this? There's the one thing that Alex Grimaldo and Jeremy Frimpong have been directly involved in: 35 Bundesliga goals this season. That's 35 goals provided from fullback positions, which is absolutely mad. And
That's
all of their preferred front five have been involved in at least 10 goals and assists. So that's Grimaldo with 9 goals and 11 assists from left wing back. That's Wirtz with 11 goals and 10 assists from sort of the left wing inverted number 10. That's Boniface, who's only really played the first half of the season with 11 goals and 8 assists. Jonas Hofmann, who by far is the least impressive on this, still got 5 goals and 6 assists. And Jeremy Frimpong from right wing back with 8 goals and 7 assists. Wow. No? Armin,
Yeah.
anything I have to say about this
No.
run of supremacy?
But what this shows that how well they I don't know, they don't rotate at all. Like they always play their best 11. And I think you could see that with Arsenal last season as well, for the most part, that it helps, you know. And when you get in that rhythm, they just fire teams away like weekend after weekend. And I have to say, like, they partied a lot and they should have, like, no problem with that. But Today is West Ham away, and West Ham in Europe, and I think their ground is always really up for it in Europe. I'm gonna enjoy this one. I think it can be maybe a nice game.
Yeah, absolutely. Dwayne, you don't follow the Bundesliga as closely as Armin and I do.
Why not?
Which area are you most impressed by of this Leverkusen fairy tale?
Probably the only team I follow in the Bundesliga is Leverkusen, so it's a good thing you asked me that.
Yeah. Plastic. That was quick as well.
All those Leverkusen fans, man.
No, I just like watching good football. I think it's a testament to Alonso in the fact that he's gone with what I would call traditional fullbacks as opposed to new age hipster inverted fullbacks and stuff like that. Where he's asking them to stay out wide and do a lot of attacking and also defensively. And I think they're just really good. I think they're one of the more entertaining teams to watch. They have a hint of relationism to them where Alonso just trusts the players to do what they're really good at. And they're also just so well drilled. And you were mentioning the amount of goals, and I just kept thinking, like, they've got so many different players to score, and then United have got zero scorers. I'm a bit jealous.
Yeah, man. If only we had even, I'd even take a fullback who can score 8 goals. I mean, it doesn't even need to be the striker.
No United
No,
talk.
thank fuck not. Thank fuck for
I'd probably just
that.
take healthy players right now.
It would cheer me up.
That depression, Armand, that depression that you're feeling now, that's become like a constant over the past 10 years or so for us. So don't you
But to be
worry.
honest, it's much more worse when you're near it and then you miss it than rather than. I didn't
You
feel that
too.
way. I didn't feel that way when we were down in the dumps. Like, yeah, I felt bad, but this right now, it's so
Well,
bad.
you had an episode of Arsenal Fan TV today where you just vented your feelings for about 5 minutes straight on
Yeah, I
Arsenal.
did. Probably a bit more, I don't know, reflective. But
It's good. It's good. Boys, that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much for joining. Thank you, Arman, for pouring your heart out when it hurts the most. Dwayne, as
Didn't help,
always,
to be honest.
thank you for your insights. I'm gonna just stop talking after this sentence and you guys can have the last word of this potty. You up for it? Goodbye.
See you next time.
Bye bye.
It's rubbish as usual.
It's
Unbelievable.
rubbish. Yeah, it's
Such
rubbish.
a depressing bye-bye.